2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
The Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies?
Yeah,
we've got you covered. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the Sports Zone.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben Anderson's going to join us coming up here in a bit.
We need Ben.
We need a little dose of Ben.
We need a little dose of Ben. I'm hoping Ben will tell me his final four. I think I saw, when I was filling out my bracket at KSLSports.com, I think that I saw he'd already got his bracket up.
Oh, really?
I think. But if you don't have your bracket up,
shame on you.
Get out there, get it done, KSLSports.com.
Fox Hollow.
You can go golf at Fox Hollow. KSLSports.com and just enter in your bracket. Fill it out. It's super easy. And you can compete against all of us.
Ben, do you got your bracket up yet?
I do. It's up there. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
It showed it.
Yeah, Hans thought he saw that.
It didn't show his picks. It's just when I was entering my bracket today, Ben, it was like, you could compete against the greats like Ben Anderson. But it didn't mention Hans Olsen.
Well, I designed the bracket. So yeah. There's a reason.
A little $5 bill to Maddie, and you can get what I mean.
Yeah. You help take
whatever
the one.
You want.
You help pick the 1 through 16. Are you willing to give us your final four?
Off the top of my head, I don't have my paper bracket in front of me. I have Kansas, I have Texas, I have Alabama, I think I might have UCLA. Honestly, I'd have to pull it up. I can pull it up really quick.
Wow.
It's online here.
You got Texas coming out of Midwest, huh?
I like
what
Texas.
What are they, the two seeds?
Yeah.
Yep.
They got a ton of talent. I know they had an issue with their head coach choking his wife in the middle of the season and got fired, but they don't seem to miss him at all. Rightfully so. So they've been good. Yeah, that's a very good basketball team.
That'd be a great story, too. UCLA is an interesting pick. You're not buying the Gonzaga hype?
Gonzaga's always good, but even at their best, and this is not their best, they usually flame out at some point. So, no, I'm not buying Gonzaga this year, unfortunately.
Did you at least take them to the Elite Eight?
I'm trying to pull up my bracket here. Now I don't even know how to find it. I'm at kslsports.com, and I don't even see the bracket challenge glued there to the front, but maybe I'm not looking very well. I do think I have them in the Elite Eight. They're the three seed, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've got them up to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, Gonzaga would come out of the West into a three seed and would face Kansas as the one seed in the Elite Eight.
I think that's what I have, and then, yes, I have Kansas winning it all, so I have them advancing.
Do you tend to do well with these brackets?
No, not anybody. But I do okay. I mean, I don't think I'm ever last place. I'm generally a little bit a little bit informed. It helps me a little bit, and I listen to what Scott Girard tells me when he jumps on my radio show and tells me which upsets to pick, so that helps. And I know which 12-5 to look at. But you know what? You're pretty safe if you go chalk for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. That makes me a little nervous.
I mean, I think my lowest, maybe I have, what is Kansas State? Are they a 3 seed? I might have Kansas State. I'm still trying to pull this up.
They got a good coach. Kansas State is not a bad pick.
I've got Kansas State to the Sweet 16, but I've got them getting beat by Michigan State, the 7 seed.
Tom,
I'm not so sure about Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, everybody gives Tom Izzo a break because Tom Izzo's always had teams that go on NCAA tournament runs, but I don't think this team's it for him.
You don't think this the one, huh?
Yeah. Ben, you, I made a joke when I hopped on your show that, you know, because there's a lot of guys that cover the NBA, and I totally get it, by the way. This isn't a knock, but when you watch a lot of NBA, sometimes watching college basketball is very difficult because it's a different game. It's not as fluid. It's not as, athletic, and you don't see the same type of athleticism and fluidity on the court as you do in the NBA. Is it hard for you to watch college basketball sometimes?
Not at this point, the tournaments when they're out there and the kids are playing hard and dialed in and it kind of gets on an equal basis because no one has time to prepare for one another. It really evens the playing field. And I think, and then they're playing so hard. It gets really easy to watch at this point. My own bias just has me looking for NBA players when I watch college games, which, you know, there's only going to be 60 players drafted. With the way the league works now, you know, the top 15 kids, maybe only 7 of them are actually in college. The other kids are playing for Overtime Elite or G League Ignite or whatever. And then some of the kids are coming from overseas. So there's just not as much as you used to be able to watch. And that's my only knock on it. It's a little slow. I don't love the timeout patterns. I wish they had quarters. I wish they had a shorter shot clock. There's things I would change about it. But at this point, I gear up and I can totally buy into it.
All right, Ben, the Utah Jazz are going to be returning after tonight's game against Miami on this 6-game road trip. Will they return 3-3 or will they return 2-4?
I suspect they're 2-4. I don't think this is a win for the Jazz tonight. No Jordan Clarkson. He was just announced as being out by the team about a half an hour ago as he continues to deal with that finger injury on his left hand. So this is going to be a tough game. I imagine the last game of a road trip is always brutal. These guys are ready to get home. They haven't been here for 2 weeks. It's in a pretty tough place to play in Miami, and they're going to be hungry for a win. And also, you've been in Miami for the last day, so that generally doesn't lead to the greatest quality road performances when you've had a night off in Miami. So I would imagine the odds are stacked against the Jazz pretty heavily in this game.
I mean, I'm worried about David Locke on the broadcast, let alone the guys out there on the court.
He has all those bad influences around him, like Ron Boone, who's taking him out on the town.
Oh, I could see Ron just encouraging David into all kinds of crazy,
nefarious activities.
Ron knows where the bodies are hid in Miami.
You know, it's interesting, too, when you look at, I mean, what's your evaluation of this Miami team? Because, you know, we talk about a lot of teams in the East. Miami doesn't get talked about a lot.
Extremely disappointing this season, and I can just pull up their latest box score and look down the list and say, well, Jimmy Butler had 38 points and you're in Orlando, that's got to be a win. When they got outscored by 12 in overtime, and they got outscored 18-6 in overtime, and just like the Kyle Lowry addition hasn't worked at all. They've got Kevin Love in the starting lineup now, which, you know, there was a reason why Kevin Love wasn't playing in Cleveland either. As beloved as he was there, he just is not the player he used to be. Kyle Lowry, as we mentioned, is just not very good. He's had to move to the bench. Tyler Hero has not developed into the next star in Miami the way people hoped. Bam Adebayo is pretty fantastic and, you know, isn't there every night, isn't great every night. So even when you get huge performances from Jimmy Butler, they just don't have all the right pieces around him. And they just had some weird whiffs. I mentioned Lowry. I know I've said that 3 times now. But, you know, Duncan Robinson signing that $80 million contract and just turning into from the best shooter in the NBA to just absolutely, you know, below mediocre, below average as a shooter, that's a huge chunk of your salary cap to be paying to a guy who can't play. So they've made some issues, which is unusual there because Pat Riley, I think Shane Battier has been in the front office there. They usually have done such a good job with player movement, player development and those types of things. It's weird to see them struggle like they have.
Well, Ben, they come home from Miami and they get a very rare 5-day break before they take on the remainder of their schedule, 14 games out. And I'm I've been looking down their schedule. There's a couple of games that are probably wins. There are a couple in there that you could say are wins. But through the remainder of the 14 games, it's actually a pretty difficult stretch for the Utah Jazz. How do you kind of break it down, or how do you look at the remaining games on this Jazz schedule?
Yeah, I see one guaranteed win the rest of the way. And even then, it's not guaranteed because there's a guy named Damian Lillard on that roster. But home against Portland, with how dreadful Portland's been in the last couple of weeks, is the most likely winnable game. But I'll just run over this for you really quickly. At Miami, very tough. Boston's the second best team in the East. Sacramento is playing unbelievably well right now. Home against Milwaukee, at Sacramento, home against Phoenix, who might have Kevin Durant back at that point, but regardless, Phoenix is better than the Jazz. At San Antonio should be a win, but the Jazz are 1-2 against the Spurs this year and got beat in San Antonio already. At Boston's a loss. At Brooklyn, Brooklyn's still playing for the playoffs now, and Mikal Bridges is fabulous. The Lakers at home, Lakers are trying to make the playoffs. Home against Oklahoma City has, you know, could be a tank off, or could be Oklahoma City trying to make the playoffs. That one's a toss up. Home against Denver, Denver's already got the one seed wrapped up. They might not be playing anybody. And then at the Lakers again, I think they're trying to make the playoffs. So I just look at the schedule to close, and I don't see a lot of checkmark wins that are obvious. So, you know, I know some Jazz fans were not thrilled about winning in Orlando and winning in Charlotte because of what it's done to the standings. You're in the ninth seed in the West right now. But if you lose tonight, you drop to the 12th because all the teams you're tied with are idle. And then I don't know how many more wins you have on the season. I mean, it legitimately could be two. It could be as many as five, but I don't think it's going to be many more than that.
That's what I've got. I did 2-12 through the remaining 14.
I mean, that's pretty brutal. Honestly, that's a pretty brutal close to the season. But it's going to be beneficial because you look at the standings overall league-wide. I think the Jazz are only two games out of having the sixth pick because Chicago has weirdly won some games now. All these teams are so close in the league that you could go from the 14th pick, which is what they would have if the season ended today, all the way up to six, with only really Orlando, Charlotte, San Antonio, Houston, and Detroit ahead of you.
What's the best realistic future for Talen Horton-Tucker? What do you envision him seeing in a best-case scenario that's realistic?
I'm trying to not read into kind of the hesitancy with which Will Hardy talked about him after the game the other night. I do think what we saw from Talen Horton-Tucker the other night is unrealistic.
Yeah.
Because his usage rate was at 40%. I mean, he just basically took the ball, gave himself the green light, and because Charlotte doesn't want to play any defense, he just took it to them over and over. And then he did the same thing against Orlando the night before that, and his usage rate wasn't as high, but he was playing against some smaller guards, and Markelle Fultz and Terry Rozier. He's really dynamic with the ball in his hands. And he still is not somebody I would trust late in games to him to have to make plays if it was a two-point game or a four-point game because he's very turnover-prone. I think he's probably best served as a six-man who can get a lot of those opportunities, high-usage opportunities off the bench. And even then, I mean, if he can't be a proven shooter, if teams are going to back off of him and not give him all that, you know, runway to gain, or they'll give him more runway and try and draw charges against him, or they'll just let him shoot threes. And the problem with him is he's shown that he can be a sucker for shooting threes even when he can't make them. So that's my issue with Talen Horton-Tucker. But it's very intriguing at 22 years old with that frame. He's got crazy athleticism. He's got the longest wingspan to height ratio in the NBA. So he really does have a truly unique build on top of his weight that he carries with him, which he can handle very naturally. There's a lot there. But even asking, you know, people close to the Jazz what the ideal role is for him, or who they think he is, or what his comp would be with anyone else they've ever seen, nobody knows. So that's what's so hard about it. It's hard to be truly unique and not have an idea of what that guy's supposed to be doing.
So Ben, Scotty and I have been spending some time looking up the upcoming draft because I think it's more interesting than the upcoming postseason for the Utah Jazz. And we know that there are the big two, the Victor Wembanyama and the Scoot Henderson picks at the very top of the board. But as we've looked at it and as I've kind of studied through it, you got a couple of overtime elite players that are coming out, Amen Thompson and Ozer Thompson, a couple of great guards that are going to be fantastic. I know you got Nick Smith out of Arkansas. I don't know what happens with Brandon Miller, but we all have seen what he's able to do under scrutiny and under a lot of pressure, and we'll see how he does in this upcoming NCAA tournament. But as you look at the upcoming draft for the Utah Jazz, Ben, do you believe outside of those top two picks, the Jazz could find another cornerstone piece for their roster?
Yeah, I think this draft gets a little bit overrated because of how good Victor Wembanyama is. And even then, the gap between him and Scoot Henderson is somewhat significant as far as, you know, a prospect goes. You have to like that you know, Scoot has put on the performance he has this year with the G League Ignite. But he is small. He is 6'2". He's only 195 pounds. Like, generally, the best guards are still really big. You know, Ja Morant is unique because he's so athletic, and don't get me wrong, I think Scoot has some of that similar athleticism, but even then it can only kind of take you so far. So is he a cornerstone player? Does he have to be the second or third best team on a really good team? That's a big question for Scoot going forward. And then it really does open up. Brandon Miller probably should be the third pick, but you take a gun to a crime scene where it's used to kill somebody, and that's going to be very heavily scrutinized, and rightfully so. But by all reports that I've heard and talking to people who know the drafts, that he was just a great kid before that, until this, you know, I don't know if it was a horrible mistake or decision or whatever you want to call it, but that was terrible. But he's probably the third best player in this draft. The Osser and Amon Thompson twins, as you talked about, are very intriguing with their size. They're 6'7", they're guards, they're freakishly athletic. Amon Thompson's by far the best athlete in this draft. They're intriguing if they can hit their potential. Osser Thompson's much more of a defensive player than his brother is, who's more ball in hand. Those guys are out there. Cam Whitmore, Jairus Walker. I mean, there are players that I think there's going to be talent and all-stars, but I don't think there's like a very clear-cut 4 through 12 that's going to give you an obvious, like, hey, if you can get into the top 7, you're getting a star, or if you can get into the top 10, you're getting a star. I think it really does open up after those top 2 or 3 players, and it's just a wild card. You really have to draft right at that point.
Talked to a scout down at the Mountain West Conference Tournament, and I asked him about Brandon Miller, and I said, if it continues on, no charges are filed, and he continues to play well, would you have a problem drafting him? And he said, honestly, with his talent level and the fact that no charges are filed, I'd draft him in a second and not worry an ounce about it.
Yep, and that's what I've heard too, in all honesty. And, you know, you don't want to overlook this horrible situation he was a part of and contributed to. He really did. I mean, whether he gets charged legally with it, there's some culpability there that he didn't, when his friend said, hey, bring me my gun, he didn't say, where are you and why am I bringing you your gun? Like, what? It wasn't Brandon Miller's gun. It was his friend's gun. But, like, why am I taking it to a party? Or why am I taking it to a crowded bar in a college town? Like, those are horrible decisions that an 18-year-old made that changed the lives of a lot of people, his included. But really, I mean, it took a young woman's life. It was a single mom, I think, if I understand correctly. So there's that culpability for it. And still, you know, he didn't pull the trigger, thankfully. And, you know, the people who did are being held responsible and have been charged with murder. And if everything else checks out, you know, there are worse people around than what Brandon Miller did, as stupid as it was and as bad as it was. So, a team will draft him number 3 overall, I have no doubt, if there are no charges come.
Ben, where do you stand on Greg Hardy's first season as the Will Hardy's first season? How he's called.
Speaking of a bad
dude. Yeah, very bad. As the Utah Jazz head coach, give us a grade on it.
I think it's been probably an A. You know, maybe an A-minus, depending on, you know, if there was, you know, more you could have gotten out of certain guys. But I don't know if that was really possible. I'm not sure what type of handcuffs he's been given by the organization, in all honesty. I don't think a lot. I don't think Danny Ainge or Justin Zanuck is calling him and saying, like, you don't get to play Jordan Clarkson tonight. We're trying to lose in Miami, and you have to do that. I don't think that's what he's been doing. But, you know, to that point, Jordan Clarkson's had the best year of his career. And it's a veteran who's stepping in, coming off of a coach who he really liked playing for, my understanding, and Quinn Snyder. And Quinn was an offensive genius who got a lot out of guys. And even, you know, Will Hardy's getting as much or more out of this team than I think even Quinn Snyder would have. They're a top 5 offense, and that's really promising. You're going to have to get some other defensive guys around to come in and build that up, and they will. They'll find those guys out there. But you know you have a type of system that can allow guys to flourish. And then you get to credit the players that Lauri Markkanen's been as good as he has, and Jordan's been as good as he has, and some of these other players have stepped up and played well. But I also think he's got a ton of accountability from his players, which is probably the most promising sign and is a delicate balance here in Utah, whereas guys get more and more popular, and it's a small town. You have a lot of power as a player in Utah. And that was one of the criticisms, I think, of the last iteration of the Jazz, was that the players got a little bit too empowered and it allowed them to not play defense or do some of the things that they needed to do to actually win the most important games of the season. And that's why you ended up having to blow it up. I do think Will Hardy, I mean, he says it after every game, I'm probably too hard on Talen Horton-Tucker. I'm probably too hard on Walker Kessler. You hear that a lot because I think he is. I think he really coaches these guys hard, but they bounce back. He knows what buttons to push, and they seem to respond well. So I don't think he necessarily is, you know, the barking coach, the hard coach that nobody wants to play for. I think guys really respect him, but I think there's overall accountability, and he does seem to put the work in despite being, you know, as young as he is. He certainly seems to have the right demeanor to be a head coach.
I just like picking your brain on a lot of NBA topics here, but I think a lot of us were skeptical about Kyrie Irving in Dallas. They've lost five out of their last seven. What do you think the issue is? Is it more than just Kyrie being weird and it's not meshing, or what do you think's going on there?
No, I mean, it's just a bad stylistic fit. You know, it was kind of exactly as bad as everyone thought it might be, where Kyrie needs the ball and Luka needs the ball and neither of them play defense, and that's just really hard to do. You could always hide Luka on a player because you know, on the worst defensive player on the other team, because you had Dorian Finney-Smith and you had some guys that wanted to go out there, and you had the excellent size of Spencer Dinwiddie, who's not an elite defensive player, but he can play defense and is willing, and we saw that in the playoffs last year against the Jazz. And that allows Luka to do a lot of things, you know, or to not do a lot of things defensively, I guess I should probably say. And now I don't think you have that luxury anymore without some of those defensive players and some of that length. So I get why they made that gamble. That's a pretty cheap price to pay for a player of Kyrie Irving's talent. And I don't think it has anything to do with Kyrie and his weird attitude off the floor for why they're struggling. But stylistically, it's really bad, and I don't know if Kyrie's going to come back next year, because he is out there for himself and he's going to go find his best deal, and that's totally his right. He's an unrestricted free agent. He can do whatever he wants, but they're probably going to take it out on Jason Kidd, which is could be a mistake. I thought he out-coached Quinn Snyder last year in the playoffs. So, you know, that can end up being very disruptive, and that was a move, you know, maybe not a knee-jerk reaction because they were the first team to make a trade this season when they traded for Kyrie, but it felt like they felt rushed. They didn't trust what they had despite the fact that they made the conference finals last year, and maybe they just had a poor 60 games to start the season. They probably should have seen it through, because in the long run, if Kyrie leaves, you did give up a decent price for a rental of a guy who didn't help your roster at all and certainly didn't make you more competitive in the West. Does that change in the playoffs? It's really hard to guard both of those guys, and I've said a lot on the air that Luka by himself is probably good enough to take every series to six games, because he can win you two games by himself in the playoffs because he's truly one of the greatest players on the planet. Does having Kyrie next to him change that by either taking the ball out of his hands or just making them so putrid defensively that they don't have a chance? That's what I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, it's so crazy, Ben, because I don't think of myself as being an NBA expert, but when I saw that move for Kyrie Irving, I instantly thought this is not going to work. And Kyrie could have been on a couple of different rosters in the NBA, and I could have said, yeah, I think that's going to work. But this just felt like such a non-fit for me. And on the reverse of that, when I saw Kevin Durant and his move to Phoenix, which is not a rental, but potentially a long-term fit, if he can get his health back, I thought that's the perfect fit. Now, here they are dealing with Kevin Durant off the court with what seems to be a pretty severe ankle twist in a warm-up situation. Give me your expectations on his return. When do you think it'll happen? I heard you mention that the Jazz play Phoenix here in a couple weeks, and you thought maybe he's back then. But when do you expect Kevin Durant back, and what do you expect of this Phoenix Suns team once he is back?
Yeah, probably before the end of the month, which is not, you know, drastic to say. It's the 13th today. He heard it about a week ago, and they said 3 weeks initially he'd be reevaluated. So, yeah, maybe the 21st, maybe, you know, maybe somewhere around that. I'd have to pull up Phoenix's schedule and see exactly what dates that they would target to bring him back. But that only leaves you, what, 8 games of the regular season, 10 games in the regular season to try and figure out what he does and how he fits. And then you've got to go into a playoff run, and they're probably facing either the Clippers or the Warriors in the first round. Like, they could absolutely lose in the first round of the playoffs because they just don't know exactly what this roster is supposed to be doing. Not to mention that, you know, Cam Thomas and Mikal Bridges are fabulous players. Really, I mean, Mikal Bridges is doing very similar things in Brooklyn to what Kevin Durant was doing. I mean, he's not that good, don't get me wrong, but he scores 35 very regularly. He's a great defensive player, and he's kind of a star in the making. So So they went all in on this trade by moving those two pieces, plus four future unprotected draft picks. There's a ton riding on this season being successful, because next year, he's a year older. What do you think? He's 35 or 36. He's got a history of injuries. He's played a ton of basketball. Chris Paul, I'm telling you right now, is way closer to the Mike Conley that we watched on this Jazz team than the Chris Paul that I think we naturally think of, this Hall of Fame superstar point guard. He just doesn't have that in his game anymore the way he used to. And now he's going to have to go chase around. You know, we've talked about these different guards. I mean, even if it's Russ, he's a better player than Russell Westbrook, but that's a pain to have to chase for a whole playoff series, or much less Stephen Curry, who's, you know, one of the greatest we've ever seen. So that's going to be a really, really tough playoff matchup. And heck, it could even be Dallas if Dallas finds and puts it together. And then Chris Paul has to chase around Luka and Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, eliminated them last year in the postseason. So I'm not totally sold on the Suns. And we may look at how much they spent to give up to get Kevin Durant as not worth it in the long run.
Hey, tell Jake Mountain West is going at least 2-2. It's going to be all right.
Man, he was so bummed about them today. He was so hurt by his expectation they were going to go 0-4.
Yeah, our guy was a little salty this morning. I liked you calling him out on his, like, you know, anti didn't want to pay taxes and any of that stuff anymore. That was funny.
Well, did Jake have a bad day today? I didn't get to hear the show today.
He's a little. Jake's always kind of a bit of a curmudgeon, but. It was.
What did he take the Mountain West Conference? What was that?
Well, he's just upset because the Mount and he's right. The Mountain West traditionally performs poorly in the NCAA tournament, and he's upset because they've made him look bad.
Oh,
but come on, they're predictions. They make all of us look bad. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Right. Anyway. By the way, I do have Kansas State in my Final Four.
I like it. That's a good pick. Love their coach.
I've got Alabama, Kansas State, Texas, and Kansas.
Ben, you are the best. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks, Ben.
Ben Anderson, you hear him every day from 10 to noon right here on The Zone. You also read him as the Jazz Insider for KSLSports.com.
Ben is very slender.
He is.
Yeah.
Is that just out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's really lean. Yeah. He's a lean person.
Yeah. Very sleek.
He is.
Svelte. Very svelte.
I have not asked to feel his biceps yet, but I'm going to.
Now, some of those
flex out for me.
You know, some of those dudes are big eaters. Like, even though, you know, they burn it off quickly, you look at Ben and say, that's a dude that can knock it down.
I look at Ben and think that guy loves being lean and probably takes extra precautions to do so. That's my guess. Because Ben's starting to get up there in age, too.
That would be an interesting conversation point with him.
Ben's our age, isn't he?
I think he's a little bit younger.
Yeah, a little younger.
Probably mid-30s.
Let's just say if he liked some sort of concert, he would say, that slaps.
Yeah. No, Ben would not do that.
Okay. Yeah, he would.
And then he'd go to Old Dominion?
For a tenth time, yes. Yeah.
Hands of Scotty, Jeanette Bott's kind enough to join us from the Utah Food Bank. And some of the stats out there are just staggering. You look at the state of Utah, 1 in 9 Utah children are unsure where their next meal is going to come from.
That's horrible.
Nearly 300,000 Utahns are at risk of missing a meal today. You can help out. Big event coming up this Saturday. And Jeanette, we can't thank you enough for coming on here and helping get the word out.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so important that we talk about Feed Utah that's happening on Saturday. And this is a great way to get in front of your listeners. So thank you.
And it's so easy to help. That's what I want to stress to people. This is not a tall task. It's so easy, Jeanette. Just explain what you're looking for our listeners to do on Saturday.
So we're asking folks to donate one bag of groceries to us on Saturday morning. You can do it a variety of ways. You can have it out on your front porch by 9 a.m. Saturday morning, and a volunteer should pick that up. You can take that bag of groceries to any Macy's store across the state of Utah and leave it with them. You can go to any pantry, brick-and-mortar pantry throughout the state that's accepting. Or you can even check the webpage at utahfoodbank.org/feedutah. And there's a list of all the addresses where we'll be set up to receive food. So any of those locations can take that food. If you don't have time for that, you can always do an online monetary donation. We would appreciate that as well.
And the website to do that is really simple. Just all you have to do is go to utahfoodbank.org/feedutah. And you mentioned earlier that, hey, if it's something that you like, then that means probably other people like it as well when you're trying to decide what to put out on the porch.
Absolutely. You know, and we ask you to give thought to things that are not expired. We look for things that are not in glass containers. We'd love to have foods that are lower in sodium or in sugar. And, you know, we have to remember all of our kids love things like mac and cheese and hamburger helper and box meals that kids can prepare. So there's a pretty broad range of things that you could select from. And I'm guessing that most of those things are probably in your own pantry at home.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. And again, get to the website right now for more information. If you want to make a financial contribution as well, utahfoodbank.org/feedutah, or just have your bag of non-perishable items out on your front porch by 9 a.m. on Saturday, right here on 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone.
Wherever you go, the Zone will be right there with you every step of the way. It's the all-new KSL Sports Zone.
I love it.
Where you can listen to The Zone wherever you may be.
Listen to me, this stuff is available everywhere.
It's your new home for streaming The Zone and getting all the latest news, insight, and analysis of the teams you can't live without. It's the all-new KSL Sports app. Available now wherever you shop for apps.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Remember, Jeff Donovan with Get Your ERC Refunds will be live today during Unrivaled. Make sure to listen today from 3 to 6 with, again, Get Your ERC Refunds.
All right, Scotty, for the good today, it's a very obvious good. The University of Utah women's basketball team is going to be hosting a couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament. They were named a 2 seed. They're going to be taking on Gardner-Webb. They finished the season 25-4. They finished the season ranked number 8 in the country in the final AP Top 25 poll. They are fantastic. They pretty much swept the Pac-12 conference awards. I know Coach Roberts took home Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
I believe Peely took home Player of the Year. And then I think there was one other award that was announced, and it's slipping my mind. But they did a great job kind of cleaning up the Pac-12 conference awards. And now they got an opportunity to show what they're all about. It is bizarre. It's always strange when you see the 1 seeds come out, and you see Stanford as the 1 seed, and you saw them dominate Stanford at the Huntsman Center to finish out the season. That was the big game that we all kind of pubbed and brought Coach Roberts on this show and talked about. And they beat Stanford, and they beat them well. But then they followed that up with a loss in the first round of the Pac-12. Well, their first round in the Pac-12 tournament to Washington State. And it just throws everything off kilter, and they get the 2 seed.
Yeah. That Washington State game, which, look, it surprised me a little bit. Like Kansas yesterday. In the Big 12 championship game, they lose to Texas by 20. 20?
Yeah.
But yet they're a number 1 seed. Doesn't
hurt
at all.
But they lost by 20. Meanwhile, New Mexico loses to Utah State by 15 or whatever it was and falls out of a quad one.
Yeah, exactly. Or had Utah State not beaten Boise State, they're not even dancing.
If they don't beat Boise State in the second round.
I don't think so. Yeah.
You don't think so? Even though they came in as a 40.
Yeah.
and with net numbers that are through the roof.
So 40 in the tournament selection and a 10 seed, did that exceed your expectations when it came down?
No, I think that was about the range.
So but remember, the conference tournament championship game.
That 40, remember, 40 is the last 10 seed. So they were right there at 11, and you get into that 11 range, then you're starting to get into the play-in range too. Yeah. So they weren't that far out of perhaps being as a potential play-in team.
Man, I didn't even think about that. That Boise State win was the kind of the propellant to get them to the tournament. If they would have lost to Boise State, they probably wouldn't have been in this tournament.
I don't think they would have been in. Or they'd definitely be playing in Dayton tomorrow, for sure.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
But really proud of this University of Utah women's basketball team. Happy for Coach Roberts. This women's basketball team set all kinds of records throughout this regular season for the University of Utah when it comes to their women's basketball program. And I couldn't be more happy for them. Excited to see them open this up. And again, hosting two of these NCAA tournament games. Yeah.
By the way, congratulations to Southern Utah. They beat Cal Baptist 82-73 in the WAC tournament championship. So they are making their first ever trip to the NCAAs. They were also the regular season champions. I believe they're playing Notre Dame, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it is Notre Dame. How great is that?
That's awesome.
Good for them. First time in the history of their women's basketball
program.
Love
those stories. All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Well, Hans, I tweeted out on, let's see here, what was it? I did a quick screenshot this morning. When Chris Beard was let go at Texas, I said, quote, from an upcoming presser in March, "We've done our own investigation and firmly believe this was an unfortunate, isolated event, which the full story has not been reported on. Coach Beard shares our commitment against domestic violence. We are thrilled to welcome Chris to our university." Well, today, Ole Miss is going to be that school. Ole Miss released a statement. "We are excited to welcome Coach Beard." I like this, by the way. They name all of his daughters. "And his daughters, Avery, Ella, and Margot, to the Ole Miss family. We thoroughly evaluated a number of outstanding candidates, and we looked into the situation with Chris Beard. After conducting a due diligence and speaking to a number of individuals on and off the court, it was evident that he is the right person to lead our team to greatness." Ole Miss is the new home of Chris Beard.
Sports never fails to prove you right, does it?
No.
So a lot of you might wonder what Chris Beard's story is. Maybe you're hearing this for the first time. He was the head coach for the Texas Longhorns. And then in January, he was let go following an arrest on December 12th. That arrest came after his fiance, a woman named Randy True, called 911 and told officers that he choked her from behind, bit her, and then hit her when they got into an argument. And Texas, I think, trying to do the right thing, trying to kind of get out in front of this, tried to make the right decision. Well, through this woman, Randy True, ended up releasing a statement on December 23rd where she denied telling police that Beard choked her and said that she, and I quote, initiated a physical struggle with Coach Beard. And on February 15th, Scotty, those charges were dropped. Travis County District Attorney Jose Garza reviewed the evidence and took into account True's wishes not to prosecute Beard and dropped the charges. So there are no charges.
Yeah.
She went back and said that she initiated it. These things are so difficult. They're just difficult because he's a great coach. Everywhere he's gone and everything he's touched, he seems to do a great job. He led Texas Tech to a national title game back in 2019. And he's led three different programs to the NCAA tournament going back to 2016. Ole Miss knows that they can bring him in, and they're going to, bare minimum, they're going to get to the tournament.
Yeah. It's a great coach. You can't deny it. He's won at a high level at Texas Tech. He was winning at a high level at Texas. Everywhere he goes, he'll win.
So what you have to do as an employer is you have to say, will he repeat on our dime? Will he repeat on our watch? Will he become a negative headline to where we have to answer for it? Will he hit another woman? Or will he do this for the first time with these charges dropped? Because if that happens and you hired him, now you look like an inhibitor. You look like somebody that is going to abate and house a person like this. And that's an ugly look. You have to really trust that he's turned a leaf if there was a leaf that needed to be turned. And I guess that's what you go off of. No charges? You bring him in. You interview him. Did this happen? No. Is it ever going to happen? No. Are you willing to sign right here on the line that if anything like this happens, you repay the money that's owed, that has been paid, and all current years are null and void? Are you willing to put your name on that? I don't know, Scotty. I don't know how you even present that or how you move forward with this.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, as an athletic director, you are judged by the success of your athletic programs. And not necessarily the quality of the human beings that you have in your employee. Now, you can get fired for being a bad person or for doing disgusting things. But at the end of the day, you're more likely to be fired because you're not winning games. And this athletic director is looking at it like, I bring this guy in, and if he wins, then we're all better off for it. And that's what it all boils down to. He's going to win games.
Do you lose a portion of your fan base when you make a hire like this?
No, I don't think so, especially at Ole Miss. I mean, you'll have protesters and you'll have, people at the...
But I don't think the protester would be Ole Miss fans.
I don't think so either, because Ole Miss fans are like, we're going to win games. There are no charges.
Well, and the people you concern yourself with are Ole Miss fans.
Correct.
It's the Ole Miss family.
Yep, it's all about winning.
And if you feel like you can look at him in the face and say, hey, we're going to go win some games, Ole Miss fans will probably swallow whatever anger they might have and say, all right, let's go win.
Hottie toddy.
Hey, guess what, though? The second you don't win, these things become issues.
Yep. All right, there's your bad. Let's get to the ugly.
And, of course, the ugly.
Well, if you're a longtime Jazz fan, this one hurts. Former Jazz center Felton Spencer passing away at the age of 55. Great Louisville men's basketball player. In fact, they were the ones that announced it, he had passed away. He was selected by the Timberwolves with a 6th overall pick in the 90 draft. Was an all-rookie team. Played for the T-Wolves in 1993 until he was traded to the Jazz for Mike Brown. He joined the Jazz team with Karl Malone, also Mark Eaton. Played for the Jazz from 93 to 96 until he was traded to Orlando Magic in exchange for Brooks Thompson, Kenny Gattison, and a first-round pick. Mm. Averaged 7 points, also 6 rebounds, heck of a player. And David Locke had a really good thread last night on Twitter about Felton Spencer.
I saw it.
And really felt like that 94-95 team was probably the best Jazz team. This was when Jordan was playing baseball. And the Jazz, that was probably, if he doesn't tear his Achilles tendon that year, he felt like that was probably the Jazz' best chance of winning a title.
He also talked about how much he loved Felton.
Yeah.
I obviously never had an opportunity to get to know him or interview him or meet him. But 55, Scotty. So young. I have not seen a cause of death. I haven't read real deep into it. I don't know if he was struggling with ailments. Have you heard it? Was he struggling with any illness that you knew of?
Not that I know of, yeah.
I have not seen anything in regards to how, and I know it is always on the top of people's minds, but 55 years old, it always sends chills down my spine when I see somebody that was a professional athlete that passes at the age of 55. We are not invincible, man.
No. Nope. All right. Hans and Scotty, 149. Hope you're all having a tremendous Monday. A little whole world news coming up next right here on The Zone.
So, you think you know everything about college basketball?
The month being March and the topic being... college basketball.
All right, Einstein.
Word, no way.
Time to put that knowledge to the test. It's the KSL Sports Bracket Mayhem Challenge, where you can compete against your friends, family, and the Zone Sports Network staff. KSL Sports Bracket Mayhem is presented by Burt Brothers. One-stop shop for complete auto care. Done better. Fill out your bracket now at KSLSports.com.
Go!
It's time to span the globe for the hard-hitting news you care about. Well, not really. But hey, at least we found it interesting. This is Whole World News on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole world!
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're all well. Happy Monday, everybody.
Going to try to lighten up whole world news this week, Scotty.
It's been a little dark.
As much as I can. We're going to light this up, lighten it up, and have a little bit of fun. Last week got a little dark.
It's a little dark.
There were some weird stories that I needed to talk about. One here in the state of Utah and a couple of others that got really strange. But you knew with the success of Cocaine Bear, they were going to infuse cocaine into a lot of different animals. And they were going to bring that to a screen near you. Here is the trailer of the next animal that's hopped up on cocaine.
I was working for a kingpin named Garisco. Tons of mafia and drug money fueling his big campaign, HT25. The serum started failing, resulting in freaks of nature, horrible creatures created by its side effects.
There's been a change of plans.
Change of plans? Because of the lab explosion? Missing test animals?
We had an accident at the lab, an explosion. The remaining specimens were either destroyed in the explosion or escaped.
I think I saw something in the water. I think it was a shark.
It's Cocaine Shark.
Oh.
Coming to a theater near you.
Stop it.
No, I'm not kidding you.
Come on.
The movie's already been made, and it's going to be released in July, this summer.
There's no way they're releasing that in theaters.
I don't know if it
that's going to be a straight-to-DVD.
It says Cocaine Shark is scheduled to arrive in theaters in July.
At least Cocaine Bear was based on a somewhat of a true story.
Well, what they're saying is there's so much cartel that comes over the ocean. More likely than not, there has been a shark that has ingested cocaine.
So
and if that shark did, how would it act? And they've done the best to replicate that. Like Cocaine Giraffe is coming.
Cocaine Giraffe.
You know, cocaine, there's going to be Cocaine Armadillo. Like Texas is run by the Cocaine Armadillo. There's going to be some great cocaine animals coming out.
I'm telling you, I enjoyed Cocaine Bear. It was a good movie.
You can't even say that with a straight face.
Okay, it wasn't a good movie. It was an entertaining movie. The movie itself was not great. But you know what? If you wanted to sit in a nice theater for a couple hours, eat some popcorn, and be entertained a little like cotton candy for your eyes, it was fun. I had a fun time.
Look me in the eye and say,
I 1,000%.
Scotty.
What?
Lloyd, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't, but it's on my list, my to-do list.
All right, what's on your to-do list first, that or the new Puss in Boots?
Cocaine Bear.
Because
I'm not going to go see the new Puss in Boots.
Cocaine Puss in Boots.
Right. No. Not doing it.
On guard.
On guard.
I've actually heard great reviews on the new Puss in Boots, but Cocaine Shark coming out this July. Speaking of movies, the Hanson Scotty.
Yes.
90s action bracket is going to be dropping.
When does it hit?
March 16th. March 16th kicks off at noon.
Kicks off, yes.
Is our,
during our show.
Is the bracket out for selection right now? Or
I don't think so.
No. I put a little thing out. I sent out something on Instagram.
Okay.
It'll be on the 16th. I should have put a time, but I did not. So I'll send out a new one.
Lloyd, Scotty, and myself put together the 64 best 90s actions movies. And it was the most heated debate we've had, the three of us.
Yeah, got a little personal.
It got a little personal, but we all kind of came to terms and we didn't let hurtful words affect us. We shook it off and we put together a field of 64. And I think we've done a pretty darn good job with this.
It's all going to be available for you at KSLSports.com. Also, the Bracket Mayhem Challenge is available at KSLSports.com. Get there now, fill out your bracket, and compete against us. Because I guarantee you know more about the tournament than we do. All right. Hans and Scotty, Jeanette's hanging out with us once again. Big event coming up. It's the second annual Feed Utah Food Drive coming up on Saturday, March 18th. And it's been on a bit of a hiatus, but Jeanette, it is back and you are helping a lot of people out there. I mean, these statistics are pretty staggering when you find out how many people are actually needing these kind of services.
You know, it's really too bad that there's I guess if there's a business that should go out of business, it should be Utah Food Bank. We should not have to do what we're doing for so many people. It's so sad, but we can't do it alone. So we desperately need help on this weekend, and Saturday's a great day to jump on board.
So the details are pretty simple. If you've got non-perishable food items, and as we've talked about, just don't throw whatever you have in your pantry that you're not using. I mean, think that if it's something that you would like, then other people would like it as well. But you have those items on your porch Saturday morning before 9 a.m., and there's a good chance somebody's going to come by and collect it.
Well, that's the plan, and we're hopeful that it all happens. If for some reason someone doesn't make it to your porch, you can drop it off at your local Macy's store. You can take it to the closest food pantry in your area. You can bring it to the Utah Food Bank. There's lots of ways that you can find locations in your neighborhood, the easiest being to go to utahfoodbank.org/feedutah. There's a list of distribution spots and hours listed. It's easy to do. We just need people to kind of remember that Saturday's an important day and join us.
This is a crazy number. Last year, the Utah Food Bank was able to distribute 67.1 million pounds of food. That's the equivalent of 56 million meals. And that's an inspiring number, but also kind of a sad number that you've had to distribute 56 million meals last year.
Well, that was my point earlier. It is really sad that we have to be here and we have to be prepared. And we do it through the help of 230 partner agencies and pantries across the state. We fundraise at a level that's high enough that we don't charge these pantries for this food. It's distributed free of charge to the pantry and then to the end user. There's no delivery fee, no association fee. It goes straight through free of charge. And so we need help on a day like Saturday to make sure we can continue to do that, to feed those almost 300,000 who are challenged with food insecurity.
And that includes 1 in 9 Utah children that are unsure where their next meal is going to come from. For more information, go to utahfoodbank.org/feedutah. But Jeanette, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.